So I've had a little bit of an obsession lately, and it happened because I ruptured my Achilles, and I couldn't move, and I couldn't walk, and I couldn't do anything for like, you know, a couple months. And so I had noticed after probably about 4 weeks of, you know, being pretty sedentary and not moving a lot, that I started to put on a few pounds. And what happened was I put on somewhere around 13 pounds, right? So somewhere around, that sounds very exact. So really exactly, I put on 13 pounds. And so I decided that I was going to, you know, try to do something about it. I still couldn't move. I couldn't do a whole lot of things, couldn't exercise and stuff like that yet. And just now starting to be able to walk and things of that nature. So I decided to watch how much I'm eating, right? That's the only thing, only other thing you could do. You either watch how you're eating or you exercise, you know, a lot. And so I decided to do that because I couldn't do that. And so I did. And how much I was, you know, putting in my mouth. And so now it's been 32 days that I've been doing that. And since those 32 days, I've lost 15 pounds, and it's crazy. But because we have gotten something in our society where we never have enough. And, you know, food is an obvious thing when we talk about it, right? Because we love it when we go to a restaurant and our plate is full when they bring it out to us. You know, if we're going to pay, you know, money for food, we at a restaurant, we want there to be big portions, right? Amen? I mean, we just do. And when it comes out there and there's a big portion, we're like, this is awesome. You know, we go to restaurants that'll give us bigger portions. And all the, you know, so many restaurants do that. They'll supersize everything so that we can have a little bit more because we have something going on in our world right now called portion distortion. Right? We distort what we really need, and we really want more, and we want more, and we want more. Do you guys know what, like, a proper portion is? Like, this is, like, there's this map, or there's, like, this guide to it, and it's based on your hand. Have you ever seen that? Based on your hand. So, if you want a piece of meat, the right portion is the size of your palm. Right? I wish I had bigger hands. So, because if I'm going to get a steak, and it's this big, and I'm like, man, where's the rest of it? You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's one thing. Like, if you want pasta, pasta is supposed to be the flat side of your fist. That's not enough spaghetti. I'm just saying. It's just not enough. You could use your hand for a teaspoon. A teaspoon is, like, from this knuckle to the end of the tip of your finger. That's a teaspoon. A tablespoon is your thumb from the last knuckle to the tip of your thumb. A cup is supposed to be your fist, right? That is a cup. So I have been obsessed with it because I've been looking at, you know, what is one portion, two portions, because I got to put it all into this app called Lose It. And anyway, so I've just been a little bit obsessed with it. But we have this portion distortion. We want more, and it never seems like we have enough. When you look at portion sizes today compared to years ago, they're completely different. You know, you go to a restaurant, they're completely different than what they used to be. Now portions add from 50 to 150 calories in just that one portion. So you could say, well, I just ate one piece of steak, whatever it be, but it is now today 150 calories more than what it used to be. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you just increase your caloric intake by 100 calories a day, over a year you will have gained 10 pounds. Right? Just 100 calories a day. And 100 calories is nothing, right? It's like very little what amounts to 100 calories. So we have got into this portion distortion where we never seem to have enough. And what's really cool is that Solomon talks about it in Proverbs. We're going through a series called Foolproof, and we're trying to live our life foolproof. We're trying to gain the wisdom and knowledge and understanding ahead of time so that when we come up to temptations, when we want to have more and more and more, we can remember what Solomon teaches us in the book of Proverbs. So in Proverbs chapter 30, verses 7 through 9, this is what he says. Solomon says, two things I have asked of you, do not deny them to me before I die. Number one, keep deception and lies far from me. And number two, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion. Feed me with the food that is my portion. He goes on, so that I will not be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or that I will not be poor and steal and so profane the name of my God. Feed me with the food that is my portion. I don't know about you, but it seems to me that some people have more of a portion than others in life, and some people have less of a portion. We can see that some people have an abundance of things, of stuff, or whatever it may be, and some people have less. You may be sitting here today saying, I just want a little portion, please. Because we see people that have so much. Now, I also think that some people could do far more to get just a little bit more of a portion. But I think there's a lot of people that do far too much. They go too far to get the portion that they have. Because contrary to what my kids and honestly what so many adults even feel or think, having more does not make you happy. Having more does not make you happy. Having more does not make you content. And that's what we're talking about today. It is an uncomfortable subject, being content, because we live in a world that always says, no, you need one more, two more, three more. Look at this. We're going to advertise everywhere so that you can say, I need that. I want that. In fact, contentment is not getting what we want, but rather training our hearts to experience full joy, to experience this deep peace, even when we don't have what we want. See, we could say, well, I will be content when I have this, whatever that may be, but it's not, contentment is not getting what you want. It is finding joy. It is finding this deep peace when you don't get what you want, when you don't feel like you have what you deserve. So we're going to be proactive with this. We're going to try to live this foolproof life. We're going to try to gain wisdom from Scripture. And here's the key to that. We need to train our hearts. That's what we've been doing this whole time. As we're looking at this foolproof life, almost every week it comes down to what's in your heart. The words that you say, it is what's in your heart coming out. You know, self-control is not willing yourself to say no. It is something in your heart. It is something inside. And what we need to do when it comes to contentment is train our hearts. Jesus speaks on this and on being content and being discontent in a story that he tells, in a parable that he tells in Matthew chapter 20. But rather than reading the whole thing, let me just paint the picture for you. So back then in that world, what would happen is if you wanted to work for that day, you would go to the center of the city. And you would wait there for someone to come and hire you. And so this is the story that he told. These workers went to the center of the city and they waited for somebody. And then a landowner came there and said, I want to hire you. This is what happened every day. This happened. And so the landowner went to a group of them and said, I'm going to hire you and I'm going to pay you a full day's wages. I'm going to pay you one denarius. It doesn't sound like a lot, but that was a full day's wage back then. I'm going to pay you one denarius. And they're like, great, that's what I want. I want to work all day. I want to get paid for my work all day. And so they did. They went into the field and they started working. A few hours later, the landowner then came back to the center of the city and said, okay, I need more workers and I want to hire more people. And so he got more people to come to the vineyard with him. A few hours later, he went back. Another hour later, he went back. Throughout the day, periodically, he would go back and get more people to come work in his field. This is what happened all the time. This is what people needed to do in order to have employment, in order to get what they wanted. He decided to pay all of them what was fair. Now, when it comes time to paying the workers for the work that they did, he starts with the last ones hired. The ones that were only there possibly just 1 hour. And for those who had worked 1 hour, he pays them a full denarius. He pays them a full day's wage. In fact, he does that with every worker. The ones who worked 1 hour, the one who worked 2 hours, the one who worked 6 hours, and the one who worked 8, 9 hours, whatever that full day was, he paid them all the same. Now, as soon as the first men who were hired saw this, the ones who did the lion's share of the work, the one who worked all day, the grumbling began. They're like, whoa, wait a minute. I was here all day. He was here 1 hour and we get the same amount? And we're sitting here going, yeah, I don't blame him, right? I mean, that seems to be a pretty legitimate complaint. Because the harder you work, you should be paid more. That just seems what's logical. What we have here is something we all deal with, and it's the number one enemy of contentment. The cause of being in a state of discontent is comparison. Comparison. And I think there's two questions that we always ask when we are feeling discontent. The first one is when we see something that someone has, we ask, why not me? You know, why can't I have that? Why can't I have more? Why can't I have a bigger portion? Why can't I be like that? Why not me? We always ask that question, but you know what? That question is always preceded by another question. The first thing that we ask is why them? Why them and why not me? Why them and why not me? So we all go through this cycle of comparison. This is something that when sin entered into this world, this is something that we all deal with, and we probably deal with it on a daily basis. So we see something we like, right? We recognize something of beauty. We recognize something of value that we think we would want to have in our lives. We all do this. We see something, we're like, I would like to have that. But almost simultaneously with this first thing, with this recognition of this beauty, the simultaneous thing that happens is this admiration impulse, right? It's like we can't help it. We see something we like, and then we're like, I really like that. I really, really like that. It's like this impulse that just happens. So we go through this cycle. You know, we see something of beauty. So for me, one of the things that I like every time that I see it, and something that I really want someday to drive around, is this. I would love to have a Jeep. And that's not, you know, it's not a Porsche, and I don't want to care about that. I need some place to put my golf clubs. So a Jeep would be awesome, and that's a really cool-looking Jeep. It's kind of manly. I like it. You know, I really want to have a Jeep someday. Another thing that always catches my eye that I always want is a big stack of Oreos, right? Come on now. That's a huge stack of Oreos. How much milk would you have to drink to eat all of those Oreos? And those are double stuff, which I prefer normal. But anyway, that's another thing that happens. One thing that always gets me when I see it, when I'm going through online, it's something that is going on as we speak right now, is the leaderboard of the golf tournament that weekend, right? I see that, you know, when I see Jimmy Walker's up there, and I'm like, why Jimmy Walker? Like, why not me? Like, I want to be on the PGA Tour. I want to be winning the PGA Championship. Right? Why him and why not me? I'm a good dude. I mean, I could tell everybody on the PGA about Jesus if you just let me, God, be on the PGA. I played golf this week, and I hit the ball out of bounds 4 different times, you know, so I got 8 penalty strokes. It was awful, but I was out playing golf, and so that was fun. So back in the day, there was another thing that caught my eye, and something that immediately gave me this admiration impulse. And here's a picture, 22, almost 23 years ago. The one over there, that's Melinda in college. And she was in the choir at Indiana Wesleyan, and so she was doing some madrigal. She didn't dress like this every day. I might not have had that that admiration impulse if it was true. That's one of her best friends, Michelle. It's so funny because when we were friends, right? We're in the same group of friends, and we, you know, kind of hung out together. And Melinda and I, we were just friends. Well, at one point we decided, hey, maybe we'd be good if we went out sometime, right? Maybe good. We'll just go out sometime. Like, that would be great. You know, we'll do that. We'll go out sometime. Well, a couple days later, there was a Halloween party. And there was this other girl that I liked and I admired. It was just a complete admiration impulse. That was all it was, because I thought she looked good. And so I asked her to this Halloween party. Now, Melinda wasn't happy with this, but I brought her to the Halloween party. Not Melinda, this other girl, which I don't remember her name, and Melinda was there, right? And so this was after we had already agreed to go out sometime. What does sometime mean, guys? Like, it could be any time from this point into the future, right? So when she came to my apartment, and she was like, "Where's Rob?" And they said, "Well, he went to go get his date." She was like, "What?" And I'm like, "Sometime. Sometime. It's not right now, necessarily." So anyway, that night, this is what I remember. My date, can't remember her name because she made no impact on my life whatsoever. She was the most boring person. She was so boring to be around. You ever be in a same room with somebody for a long period of time and they have nothing to add to the conversation? You know, you're trying to make them talk and they just don't. And I'm just like, "You look good. That is it. That's all you got," right? That might be mean. So what Melinda did, though, was because I was there with a date, she started hanging out with my friend Sean, right? Sean Verlee is his name. And so he's flirting with her. She's flirting back. She was really good at that in college. And so I saw that. I'm on a date with somebody else, and I saw that, and I'm like, "Wait a minute. Why is she flirting with Sean, right? Why not me?" Well, obvious. There's an obvious reason for that. And then later that night, the next weekend, we came up to Fort Wayne and to go to the Haunted Castle, I guess. I didn't even know there was a Fort Wayne when I was there, but we came up to here because this is where Sean was from. We went to the Haunted Castle, and we were in line. We were waiting forever, and he says, I think I'm going to ask Melinda out. And I'm like, "No, you're not." That's what I told him. I said, "No, you're not." And he was a freshman, and I was a junior, and I said, "No, you're not." And he said, "Okay." There we go. The story goes, I married her. So take that picture off, or people are going to be distracted. So we have this recognition of something of beauty, and then we have this admiration impulse, and now we're at the crux of the comparison cycle. Right, we're at the tipping point of the comparison cycle, because now you have two choices. You can choose the right path, which is to choose God, to choose to recognize something as something that God created, as someone that God created, and recognize it for its beauty. And when we can choose God, that is choosing contentment. Even though I don't have that thing, I can recognize that it's beautiful. And when we can do that, we can be content. Unfortunately, that is not the path that most people take. Unfortunately, when they see something of beauty and they have this impulse, the next step is to choose self. To say, why them, why not me? I want that. And what that leads you down, that path leads you to discontentment. It leads you to envy. It leads you to covetousness. And so then we start planning. We start scheming, you know. We're like, "How am I going to get that? I want that." At the crux, we have a choice. We can choose God, or we can choose self. We can choose contentment, or we can choose envy. Pastor Jeff Mannion said this. I was reading in a book. He says, "We are prone to lose our balance, not because we have received less than we deserve, but because someone near us has received more than we think they deserve." So let's take a quick quiz. Right, I'm gonna ask you a question. I'm gonna put some answers on the screen, and I want you to mentally check off your answer to this question. We'll start with this one. Who are the people you tend to compare yourself with? Now, you might be able to already think in your mind who you compare yourself with, but let me give you a few categories of people that maybe will help you answer this question. Family. Your brothers, your sisters, your family, your aunts and uncles, whatever it may be, do you compare yourself with them? Your friends, your colleagues, the people that you work with, Maybe someone who has a bigger opportunity, a better opportunity than you are getting. Someone who, this happens, someone who checks out of work about an hour early and you're working that whole hour afterwards and, you know, and they're like, nobody even notices. You know what I'm talking about? And you're like, wait a minute, I am working hard. They don't work and we get the same thing. How about other students? If you're a student in college who just, students that just seem to breeze by, right? And get good enough grades. People at church, we do that. Neighbors, other parents. I think this is big because we try our best to raise our kids, but then when we see another parent raising their kids this way, we sometimes are envious of the way they raise their kids because of the way their kids act. And you're like, I just wish my kid acted like that, right? Famous people. This is something that's gone with Corbin lately. I don't know why, but he's been watching like Dude Perfect and Rhett and Link on YouTube. And so YouTube makes people famous. And so when he sees somebody, he's like, Dad, are they famous? I don't know what it is, but he's starting already as an 8-year-old looking at this. Couple more here. Teammates or competitors, right? Someone who's on your team. Even at work, they're on your team. Or maybe it's a competitor that the other place that does the same thing that you do. You know, are we envious? Are we comparing ourselves to them? Or you can just fill in the blank. So that's the first question. Now to follow up on that question, I want you to think of the list, the people that you checked off, and answer this question. What do you tend to compare? What about them are you comparing yourself to? So here's some examples. The clothes that they wear, the relationships they have, the gadgets that they get to carry around, those Apple Watches, whatever they are. You know, popularity. They have so many friends, and you're like, I just wish I was like that. Or maybe it's just the talent that they have. They're just so good at certain things, and you just wish you had that. Keep going. Their appearance, vacations that they take. How many people hate that on Facebook, right? Like, I don't need to see your other vacation at the beach anyway. Just don't post it. The achievements that they have, the jobs that they have, the opportunities that they are afforded. A couple more here. The power that they have in life, the cars that they drive, the houses that they get to live in, the amount of their paycheck, maybe even going to their house and seeing the way they decorate, and you're like, I wish I could do that. I wish I had that. I wish I could spend on those things. Who do you compare yourself to, and what is it that you compare? What is your tendency? We all have it. You can't sit here and say, well, I don't. We all do. It is something that somehow came in us. We compare. And comparing leads to envy. Let's look at the vineyard workers. They weren't upset, right, when they were in the center of town and that landowner came and hired them and he says, I will pay you 1 denarius. They weren't upset then. They were only upset when they compared what they were getting to what the other workers there were getting. And you can just look at the landowner's response in Matthew 20. Verse 13 says, friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last worker as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity? In other translations, it says, are you envious because I am generous? Are you envious because I am generous? Envy, begrudging. The Greek word that's translated into begrudging or envious is the words ophthalmos paneros. Ophthalmos paneros, and it can be literally translated evil eye or bad eye. Evil eye or bad eye. And people would hear Jesus talk about this. He would hear Jesus say, ophthalmos paneros. And they would know what he's talking about. He'd know he's talking about the eye. And the eye was a big deal then. And when they heard Jesus talking about the eye, they knew exactly what he was saying. Because what he was saying is, people with a bad eye lack judgment. People with a bad eye lack understanding. And so, the reverse side, someone with a good eye, they have judgment. They understand. They have knowledge of the situation. I'm sure many of you played baseball growing up, right? I watched Corbin play baseball all year long, and when he is up to bat, right? He is up to bat, and that ball comes at him, and it is above his head, and he doesn't swing. What does the coach say? Good eye, right? He says, good eye. That's not your pitch. Good eye. Good job. What he's saying is, your eye gave you the understanding that that pitch wasn't your pitch. That pitch was above your head. That pitch was not a strike. You have a good eye. So Jesus is telling the story, and he's telling about these workers who have an evil eye, who have a bad eye. They lack understanding. They lack judgment. They do not have the knowledge that whatever they have, whatever they are getting, is something that comes from God, not something that they earned. Something that comes from God, not something that they earned. My question is, when we recognize something of beauty or something desirable, something that we want, and we have this involuntary admiration impulse, how do we develop a good eye? How do we choose to focus on God rather than being led into envy? What can sharpen our eye as we train our hearts towards contentment? As we train our hearts to experience that deep and lasting joy that comes from knowing that we may not have everything that we want, but we know God has given us everything that we need. Solomon wrote Proverbs, and he also wrote Ecclesiastes. Right, it's more wisdom. Solomon, the wisest man ever to live, and he gives us more wisdom in Ecclesiastes chapter 6. About this very thing. And there's two things that I think we can focus on that will lead us to see and experience true commitment. And the first thing that we need to focus on is we need to accept the limitations of this life. We need to accept the limitations of this life. Right? So this world is full of possibilities, full of opportunities. And there are people in this world that have way more than we could ever even put our minds to. But what we need to understand, what we need to do, is accept the limitations. Accept the limitations of this life. And we see this in chapter 6, starting with verse 7. Solomon says, all the toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied. For what advantage has the wise man over the fool, and what does the poor man have who knows how to conduct himself before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the appetite. This also is vanity and striving after the wind. When you boil it all down, whether you're a high-priced CEO or whether you're a part-time worker in college, we're all working for food. Right? It doesn't matter where you are in life, you're all working for food. You just work for your next meal. It's sad, but it's true. Think about it. Have you ever developed this, this hunger for this particular dish, right? Like something, I said dish, that sounds weird. Something that you really wanted, right? So like I get this hunger for Chipotle often. You know, and I'm like, I just have to have Chipotle. I just can't wait to go there and get it, and I really want that. And so I will go, and I will eat the Chipotle, and I will ask for extra rice. More portion, please. I will ask for extra beans. And then what happens after you get done, you're enjoying it, you're loving it, you're like, this is awesome. You know, this is totally awesome. What happens the next day? If you have your hot sauce, it's a total different story. But what happens for everyone the next day? You're hungry again. Right, no matter how great that is, like you can think of the thing that you want the most, what you want to eat the most. When you eat it the next day, you're going to be hungry again. It doesn't satisfy you forever. You will be hungry again. There's a curious repetition when it comes to hunger. A man works and works to buy food, but it's never enough. His appetite is not satisfied. He has to keep working because he continually gets hungry and needs to eat. Solomon says wealth will never satisfy you. It will never scratch your itch deep enough. There are many times in life where you will have a choice. right? You will have a choice for more money, more of a job. Keep going up and up and up because it affords you to have more. Or you can be content with what God has you. That does not mean you don't work hard. It does not mean that you say no to every opportunity that comes your way. Because it's a matter of the heart. It's a matter of the heart. If you think what God has for you now, what he's given you now, is not enough, then there's something wrong with the heart. Wealth will never satisfy you. This illustration that Solomon is using is with food, but in his wisdom, he knows that our insatiable appetite for everything me related, whether it be my food, my stuff, my relationships, my job, whatever it is that I attempt to satisfy my hunger with, will eventually be found lacking. I will hunger for more of whatever that is. Why? Because stuff doesn't satisfy. Physical things only satisfy physical needs. Contentment, though, is entirely different. Being content deals with your soul. Contentment is a choice that we make that what we have is enough. The second thing that Solomon says that we need to do to train our hearts is to enjoy God's blessings. Enjoy it. Enjoy life. Enjoy God's blessings. In Ecclesiastes 6, at the beginning of the chapter, he's discussing the three measuring sticks of success in Hebrew society. It's interesting to think about, what is the measure of success today? You could think of jobs. You can think of what we drive. You can think of what we wear, right? We see those things and we're like, oh, well, they must be successful. They're driving that. They must be successful. They live in that house. They live on that side of town, whatever it may be. So when Solomon's talking about the measuring sticks of success in the Hebrew society, he's talking about wealth. Okay, that's the same. Stuff, possessions, that's pretty much the same. And then he says honor. Now, I would say when you think of honor, you can think of prestige. You can think of a title. You can think of those things. But when he is talking about honor, what he is talking about is having lots of kids, right? That's a measuring stick of success. The more kids you have, the more successful you are. I think it's a little bit different these days. I don't think we measure like that. But as wonderful as these gifts are, unless God is in the midst of them, we cannot enjoy them. Let's look at the beginning of chapter 6. Solomon says, there is an evil that I have seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. He's talking about all mankind, everyone. A man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all that he desires, yet God does not give him power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. It is a grievous evil. The evil that Solomon is talking about is the painful misfortune of not being able to enjoy God's good gifts. Not being able to enjoy what God has given you. In this world of comparison, we spend all our time wishing we had more when all along we are enjoying what we have. This is the way our world is set up. If you have children and they're watching TV, they see toys on those commercials and they're like, I wish I had that. Well, while they have a closet full of toys they never play with. This is how our kids are being raised by our culture. Despite giving everything that we need, what ends up happening if we live in a world of comparison is that we only can watch others enjoy it because we simply can't. Solomon is saying all the wealth, all the possessions, all the honor will still leave you wanting if it's not balanced with the wisdom to enjoy them. That wisdom is the understanding and the knowledge, and this is huge, that any and all blessings in this life are given to us by an active and present God. Any and all blessings in this life are given to us by an active and present God. All the stuff in the world isn't going to bring contentment if our heart isn't right. In fact, what happens if our heart isn't right, we find the exact opposite. We will have so much, but we'll be unhappy. We'll be ungrateful. We will be restless and we'll be full of grief. You can think of it this way. I want you to imagine for a moment that you absolutely love peaches. Finally, I'm getting to the can on the table, because you've been wondering, right? Why is there a can of peaches on the table? Right? You could love peaches so much, and then God give you so many peaches, right? He's giving you so many peaches, millions of peaches, peaches for free. Because you were thinking that, right? So you go into your pantry and there's just a wall of peaches and they're amazing. And you're just like, look at all of my peaches. And then you sit down and you're like, okay, I'm going to enjoy. This is my favorite thing in the whole world are peaches. And I'm going to enjoy the peaches. But what is wrong? What do you need to enjoy these peaches? A can opener. Yes, you need a can opener. Now, if you're wise, you would ask God to give you that can opener. But too often, we have so much. And the only thing, because we live in this world of comparison, we see other people enjoying their peaches. But we can't enjoy them on our own because we're too busy with our eyes on them. God has given you so much. And contentment comes out of understanding and the wisdom to believe what James says in chapter 1, verse 17. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father. It's a great memory verse. Every good and perfect gift is from above. Everything that you have comes from God. So rather than think, I wish I had more, I wish I had that, one more, I wish I lived there, I wish I had that job, I wish I could do those things. Enjoy the things that you have, because God gives them to you. Every good and perfect gift comes from Him. Now, we're going to end our service a little bit different than what we normally would do. We are going to read through Psalm 145. In fact, we're going to use it as a prayer to end our time today. We're going to go through Psalm 145 on the screen. And what I want you to do is just, I want you to read through it slowly, right? Just read through it, and we'll try to go as slow as we possibly can. It's really hard, sometimes anxious to push that next thing as we read it, but go through it slowly. Meditate. It's an amazing chapter in Psalms where David is expressing his joy for who God is, what God has done, and all the things that he has, every good gift that God has given him. So let's read through this together. Just in your own mind, read through it and meditate on these words.